Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the deadly and destructive myths which are associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, and with military and economic schemes. Instead of merely presenting the news, our mission is to understand what is actually occurring while predicting how these events will shape our world. Then, during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms, through evidence and reason, since His is the lone reliable voice in an exceedingly troubled world. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-300-7645. As I was listening to the tail end of the news this morning, there was a mention of the issues related to cell phones and driving. And I have, as I'm sure all of you have, been behind someone or watched someone on their cell phone while driving. And if they're talking on their cell phone, what typically happens is that they slow down. Their lane tracking deteriorates. They slow down typically well below the speed limit. Their lane tracking deteriorates. And you can see that the quality of their driving deteriorates substantially. But if they're texting, if they're looking down, and you can see one hand's on the wheel and one is looking down at a phone and they're texting, they become lethal. And the reason that I wanted to share that thought with you is that there are two ways to impair our ability to make good judgments. You see, the reason that there are serious penalties associated with drunk driving is that when you're intoxicated, when you have polluted your brain with something that anesthetizes it, it is very difficult to respond in a timely fashion and to exercise good judgment. Religion, for example, is a poison. Politics is a toxin. Patriotism also impairs one's judgment. These are the kinds of things that slow our ability to respond, and they deteriorate our ability to be discerning. That's why God is opposed to religion and politics. They're toxins, they're poisons, very much like alcohol. When Yahweh warned us about Paul, using his given name, Shaul, he specifically said that he was intoxicating, that his words were intoxicating. And he meant this in the same way that I'm sharing it with you, which is that religion is a toxin. It's a poison. It hampers our ability to exercise good judgment, which is why driving drunk is so potentially lethal. The connection, however, to texting while driving is that there are other ways to impair a person's judgment. There are other ways to slow their ability to respond, and that is to distract them. So while a distraction is not a toxin, a distraction is not like politics or religion where it is poisonous, where it is the fungus of yeast that unyeasted bread, matzah, is specifically designed to remove. If we are so distracted with life that we aren't focused on what's important, then problems come up in what's important that we fail to respond to in a timely fashion, and they grow. And ultimately they become unresolvable. We end up going through life because our reactions, our responses are delayed, and end up at a point where now it's too late to make the right choice. So being distracted, which is really the nature of our world today, particularly in the West, where there are so many ways to be distracted, television shows, movies, sports, you know, all manner of entertainment that we can go to. For many, I guess today, the most popular distraction is gambling. As I understand it, gambling is more popular and has more participants than all of the folks who go to movies, attend sporting events. If you combine everything that we can buy a ticket to, combined and compare it to gambling is larger still. It's a distraction. So while we are distracted, while we are not focused on what's important, we are as likely to exercise poor judgment and respond too slowly so as to miss our opportunity. Something to think about. Part of this, this program is all designed to focus on two extremely important things. They're opposites, but yet understanding the opposite somehow helps us clarify, make distinctions. You know, understanding is all about being able to relate things, understanding what is harmful, understanding what is good, being able to make connections between those things which are good and those things which are harmful. Yahweh has been very clear. He tells us that engaging in religion and politics is harmful. That politicians are not to be trusted. You ought not be reliant upon your government. You ought not be patriotic and wave the flag in support of your military. You ought not be religious. These are toxins. And as for distractions, there is a reason that God made it extremely difficult to come to know Him. Well, sure, He's readily knowable through His Torah. You can read it, come to know Him as He is. You can read His Torah and think about it and understand the covenant that He's offering, understand what He is asking of us if we wish to participate in it, what He is prepared to give us should we make those choices. All of those things are laid out fairly clearly, but yet to understand them, to go from knowing what He said to understanding, requires two things. One, an investment of time to read what He is offering with an open mind, and to go to a book that society tells you is antiquated, arcane, no longer useful, counterproductive even. So you have to overcome that societal impulse to disregard that source of information, and then you've got to invest the time. And it's a busy world. We work to support our families. That's why the seventh day exists. That is sufficient, according to God, to devote that day to your investigations. It takes time, though, to observe what He had to say. And it takes even more time when you're observing what He has to say, rather than just continuing to read through it like it was a novel, to study each word, to study the yods, the jots, and the tittles, the strokes of each letter, to look at how the letters were comprised in the original alphabet of Hebrew, to consider what the names mean, to consider the full palette of colors provided by each letter in each word that comprise each sentence, and then make connections between these things and other things that He has offered. Now, you can read about what Shavuot represents, something that we're going to do in the second half of this program today. And you can just read right on through it and say, all right, you got to take some of this and some of that, and you put it there, and you do this with it. And okay, that was great. Let's move on to the next topic. Or you can say, what do those things represent? Why am I being asked to make this selection? Why is this word here? What does it mean to me? Is there any way this word can mean the religious connotation of it, or do I have to look deeper than that? If I compare what I'm being asked to do on Shavuot with the single most important aspect of the Torah, the covenant, can I make a connection? Well, that takes even more time. That's why God specifically has said, unless you're willing to prioritize and focus on who I am and what I'm offering, don't bother. I'm not going to give you a Cliff Notes version. I'm not going to give you a four spiritual laws. I'm not going to come to you as a Billy Graham with a charming voice and uplifting oratory that says all you got to do is believe. I'm not going to do that. Because if we're going to spend eternity together, it's because you really want to be there. It's because you've come to know me, love me, respect me, agree with me. And so as I hear news about the issues related to cell phones and driving, reminds me that there are these two issues. One is distraction, so that we don't focus, we don't prioritize, and the other is toxins, so that even if we were to choose to prioritize, our brains do not operate properly under the influence of religion. Turning to the news, one of the things that seems to go unsaid is that we had the hearings regarding Benghazi, and everyone seems focused on something that is irrelevant, which is that Benghazi was a terrorist attack, and that's irrelevant. To say Benghazi was a terrorist attack is to say nothing. It's meaningless. It has no merit whatsoever. And yet that's the point that Republicans want to make, is that Obama didn't want to call it a terrorist attack, and that they claim it was a terrorist attack. It's irrelevant. What's relevant is that this attack, while it was ongoing, news came into the White House and into the State Department and to the CIA headquarters, and the news was that a fundamentalist Islamic group, known by the most fundamentalist name that any fundamentalist Islamic group could possibly have, you know, here's your sign, answer Sharia, supporters of Sharia, the most fundamentalist aspect of Islam, Sharia law, answer Sharia, the supporters, the friends of Sharia, had come 160 strong, armed to the teeth with rocket-propelled grenades, firebombs, 50-caliber machine guns, and automatic weapons, and they were attacking the embassy. We'll consider what happened in the aftermath when we return. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Giada. You can engage in this discussion by calling 877-996. 877-300-7645. I about gave the studio line as opposed to the guest line, but 877-300-7645. The story in Benghazi is one that, in a informed, rational, and moral world, would lead to the impeachment of the President of the United States. The utter disgrace of the former Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, so that her political career would be over. That's what would happen in a informed, moral, and rational world. You see, in the aftermath of the killing of our ambassador in the mission in Benghazi, Libya, the President of the United States, rather than do the right thing and to report to the American people that Ansar Sharia, a fundamentalist Islamic group, had planned and perpetrated the attack, and that they had actually deployed American weapons against our ambassador, and therefore it appears that we made a terrible and tragic mistake in supporting the Mujahideen, the jihadist, in their overthrow of Muammar Gaddafi. That rather than tell the truth, and that's the truth, unvarnished, and there's some times in life where you've just got to say, I was wrong. Here's the truth. We'll try not to make that same mistake again. I'm sorry that lives were squandered as a result of our error. But this is the truth. doesn't fit my worldview, he would say, because he wants Islam to be a great religion. He wants those who are terrorist as Muslims to be a sideshow, as someone who has corrupted their religion as opposed to the truth, which is that their religion has corrupted them. That would be devastating to Obama's worldview. But nonetheless, it's the truth. When the truth doesn't fit your worldview, it's time to reshape your worldview. But what did he do instead? He blamed a movie called The Innocence of Muslims, a YouTube trailer. It wasn't even a full movie. Childlessly done, but totally and completely accurate. Its presentation of Muhammad is absolutely accurate. Something else he could have attested to, as opposed to calling the movie hateful and horrible, which is what he did. And the fact is that the movie's presentation of Muhammad is indisputably consistent with all of the evidence we have. Now, why did the President of the United States do that? Because he's at war with extremism. He doesn't want to be at war with Islam. He wants to be considered the great Messiah of the world's religions, the great unifier of the world's religions, the one who opens the eyes to total tolerance and acceptance of all of the world's religions. And so he wants to be against extremism, anyone who opposes him. Extremism, in his view, would be being judgmental, which is not to be politically correct. And so he blamed the movie. Now, when he was confronted with this, and when it was proven, as it was so many times during the presidential campaign, that the movie had nothing to do with it, that it was a planned attack by Ansar Sharia, what he said is that he and his staff did not purposefully deceive the American people, that they presented the evidence that was given to them at the time. And they simply took the evidence that the CIA and State Department had presented to them, and that became the talking points. They said, don't blame us. We're simply reporting what we were told at the time. That was his answer, over and over again. And yet what the hearings revealed, particularly what ABC News discovered, and what was made public, is the inside trail of emails at State with the CIA and the White House that showed that they didn't take the evidence that was provided by the CIA or State Department. They changed it 12 times. There are 12 different edits to the evidence. It started off with the truth that Ansar Sharia had perpetrated the attack, 160 strong, premeditated, having nothing to do with the movie. And by the time they were finished with the 12 edits, there was no mention of Ansar Sharia. It was all blamed on a spontaneous combustion associated with the movie. And so the one justification that the President of the United States had and used was also a lie. So not only did he lie to the American people about the facts, he lied about the process as well. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're discussing the mythos of politics. In any debate, almost universally, debates are won and lost based upon how the issue is framed. In the case of this issue, of the Benghazi attack that led to the death of four Americans, being killed with American weapons by a fundamentalist Islamic group called Ansar Sharia. At issue here is that the President of the United States framed the issue as, initially, that it was extremism, which he is opposed to, and a Christian that was responsible for the motivating the attacks, not Islam. And then when that is found to be untrue, he frames the issue as, hey, they're already dead. By bringing this back up again. You're politicizing the issue. This is a witch hunt after me. You ought not use the deaths of others as a means to advance a political agenda. Of course, he took the opposite view when it was dealing with the gun shootings in Sandy Hook. There, it was absolutely appropriate to bring the parents of the shot children to Washington to make a political point based on their deaths. The Republicans didn't do any better. They made the whole issue. Was it a terrorist attack? And did the president announce it as a terrorist attack? That was never the issue. The issue was always, did the president deliberately and purposefully lie to the American people about an attack that defines much of the world today? An attack that will shade the means that will be used to destroy this country. An attack which lies at the center of Americans squandering thousands of its children's lives, a million lives of others, and $6 trillion worth of its coin. An attack that lies right at the heart of most everything we as a nation are doing wrong. Did he deliberately and purposefully lie? Blaming the attack on extremism as opposed to Islam. Of course, the answer, should the issue have been raised that way, is yes. And was the president's excuse for having not told the truth, that he was not given the truth, valid? And the answer, of course, is no, it wasn't valid. He was given the truth. He purposefully and deliberately changed the evidence. Now, when you take the oath of office to adhere to the Constitution of the United States and you are swearing, being sworn in as the President of the United States, in my view, just as if you are a senator or a congressman, in your public life, you're under oath. And under oath, when you deliberately lie, it's called perjury. The President of the United States ought to be impeached for perjury. Now, this is not perjury on a minor issue. This is the issue that lies right at the heart of what's destroying this country. He ought to be impeached. But for that to happen, the issue needs to be framed effectively. Something that has not happened and I suspect will not happen. And so, as a result, nothing's going to happen. America is going to go back to being poisoned by the mythos of religion and politics. It's going to go back to being distracted by all manner of things, and nothing whatsoever is going to happen. We have my friend Larry on the line. I've been ranting about this for some time, Larry. What's your take on what happened at those hearings and what's going to occur as a result of them?
Nothing's going to occur as a result of them. Nothing major. I say ran away. I mean, you got three generals, I believe, and an admiral that have been discharged because they were willing to step forward to say they were there to help.
Right.
We got a liar in charge. You don't watch with a drone an 8-hour battle and tell people to stand down unless you want the man dead. You just don't do it.
No.
It begs credulity.
Well, there's another reason. There's another reason that he, first of all, the President of the United States, when he was told that the embassy was under attack, went to sleep.
He also watched a couple hours of it.
Yeah,
so he knew what was going on. He watched it. He was watching it.
Yeah. And then he went to sleep. Didn't care.
The
reason that he did not want the United States to engage, I think, is also obvious. It's not that he wanted the ambassador dead.
Really?
No. No, it's not. It's not. I mean, that was the obvious consequence. No, he views himself as the great messiah of the Muslim world. And so he views what he did in Libya by aiding and abetting and providing weapons to the Muslims as a great achievement. To see those weapons being deployed against an American, he needs to reshape what happened there. And the last thing that he wants to do is to oppose those that he allied with. And so just as is the case of Tunisia, when what he inspired there, when Sauer, he can't oppose the new government because the new government is what he called for. In Egypt, he can't oppose the new government because it is what he called for. He can't oppose the rebels in Syria because it is what he called for. When he first went to give his reset speech to the Islamic world, this is what he envisioned. This is what he was looking for. It was being manifest in Libya, and so the last thing he wanted to do was to have the United States oppose the very cause that he was the lead troubadour.
Well, you know, that's your take. I think that that's part of it, and I think the other part is when you got a guy over there handing out 10,000 Stinger missiles to a group of people we're supposed to be at war with, then, you know, why not tie up loose ends? I really think that they've gotten to a point where they run the White House like a mafia.
Well, that is true. They supply arms and then they clean up the mess so that that the deployment of arms can't be tracked back to them. It's like the Fast and Furious.
Why not tie up a loose end? That's what I say. And then you got Fast and Furious. You got the AP situation. You got the IRS tax people all over anybody that might be a conservative or a constitutionalist. Right. On and on it goes. And you know, there comes a time when people in this country have to, open their eyes and say, you know, we live in tyranny. It's tyranny.
Right. Of course.
Yeah,
But you get right back to it. Unless you understand the overriding issues. Why did the president want the Stinger missiles supplied to the fundamentalist Islamic terrorists?
Well, I think we get back to the I'm the savior of the Islamic world.
Which is the primary motivation of all of this. And his, according to their mindset, which you've got to get to their mindset to understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. According to his mindset, the opposition is constitutionalist. The opposition is conservatives. The opposition is anyone whose worldview would oppose them. Anyone who's going to apply evidence and reason, for example. Anyone who would be a free market individual on the economic side. That's the opposition. And so they're going to do anything they can to discredit the opposition and to crush them while aiding and abetting those there that they support. And fundamentalist Muslims are among those they support.
Well, I've got a question for you. What do you think is going to be done about all this?
I think because of two things. One is that the issue was poorly framed by the Republicans. The Republicans want to make this an issue of, was it a terrorist attack? Yes. Did he mislead the American people about it being a terrorist attack? Yes. Let's make that the issue. That issue is irrelevant. And so long as they focus on that issue, it goes nowhere because the American people are way too distracted to be interested in that issue. So that being the issue, it goes nowhere, and the president goes on as if absolutely nothing happened. So my view is nothing.
Yeah, that was very weak. Those hearings weren't designed to get to truth. Those hearings were, to me, designed to sort of a pressure outlet. You know, let people go, wow, we're getting our side of the story heard now. You know, that kind of thing.
Well, I think the Republicans
said, not getting anything done, it's not going to happen.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of truth that was revealed. It's like the WikiLeaks documents. Enormous amounts of truth were revealed. All of the statements that were made at those hearings undermine the credibility of the President of the United States and the State Department. and the U.S. government. That's what they did. Every word that was spoken at those hearings was disastrous for the credibility of the president, for the State Department, for the CIA, for the U.S. military. I mean, it was disastrous. Up and down the board.
It is, then,
and
people
and,
still.
But even though it was disastrous, no one cares. Why? Because they're texting while driving. They're distracted.
Okay, you just answered my question.
They're poisoned by politics. Right, they don't care. They're poisoned by politics. They're poisoned by religion. And so, intoxicated, they can't, they're not effective witnesses. You know, it's when you're intoxicated, you don't really process what's happening around you in an effective way, and then your judgment is also incapacitated. Well,
and then they have information overload, like Huxley said, you know, it's a brave new world out there.
So 90% of them are poisoned with religion and politics, and so they're incapable of exercising good judgment or even processing what's happening. And those who are not are mostly distracted. And so things that should cause a nation to reject their government, to say, I ought not be in favor of a military that makes these kinds of things possible, that aids and abets the wrong side. I ought not support politicians that lie. I ought not be in support of a State Department that seems to always be on the wrong side, or a CIA that, if it wasn't for a lie, they wouldn't exist. At some time, at some place, you ought to say, to hell with them. I don't want anything to do with them anymore. But that's just not happening.
Gardner.
Good morning. Welcome back to the final segment of the News Hour of Shattering Myths. We're going to turn to a more interesting topic here at the top of the hour. But I wanted to conclude our discussion on America's propensity to do nothing when faced with news that is untrue. When it has been determined for fact that on what is perhaps the single most important issue facing America's future, that the President of the United States deliberately, purposefully promoted a lie. I'm going to read a headline that came up on my news feed in the last few minutes, Larry. And there are seven lies in this one headline. And I want and I want to relate the seven lies in this headline, which is a related topic, to what happened to Newt Gingrich when he was actually in the lead for the Republican nomination for president, and in the immediate aftermath of telling the truth about the seven lies that are in this article, he was put on the defensive, made to look like a fool, and was swept off center stage. Here's the report. The headline is from Reuters. It is from Ramallah. And it doesn't say Ramallah, Israel. It says Ramallah, West Bank, as if West Bank were a country. Reuters. Palestinians clashed with Israeli forces in the occupied West Bank on Wednesday during demonstrations to mark 65 years since what they call Nakba, catastrophe, when Israel's creation caused many to lose their homes and to become refugees. Let's begin. There is no such thing as a Palestinian. It is absolutely a fact that if there is no such thing as a Palestinian. Newt Gingrich, during the campaign, when there was an issue that came up relative to what we ought to do in response to this situation, said, you know, if you study history, if you are spend even 15 minutes thinking, you'll recognize there is no such thing as a Palestinian, that that's a myth. And if you don't begin recognizing that's a myth, then there is no way to understand the issues or to solve them. So Palestinians, there is no such thing as a Palestinian.
Occupied was a problem.
The next is occupied, correct. Occupied, what does that mean? Is the United States occupying Texas? Why is it the occupied West Bank? And it's West Bank as if that's a place? We're just talking about the what has been Judea. We're talking about what has been Israel from its inception. Why is it now the occupied West Bank? Then the next myth, of course, is to call the creation, not creation, to call the reestablishment of Israel as a state after the Romans pummeled the place and salted the land.
And renamed it.
To call that a catastrophe, as opposed to calling the catastrophe the Holocaust. But you say, no, to a Muslim, the Holocaust was a great triumph. And the return of Jews to their homeland was the catastrophe. Then they say in the headline, Israel's creation. Last time I checked, Israel was created 3,500 years ago.
That's what I thought. I mean, that's just me, though.
Yeah, you know, and in fact, if you really want to know Israel's creation from the first moment that Israel existed as a place and a people, it goes back 4,000 years to Abraham's grandson, Jacob, who became Israel. The next is, cause many to lose their homes. When the Israelites came back to Israel, they didn't steal anyone's home.
There was nobody there.
Well, there were people there, but they didn't steal anybody's home. And the Muslims, the Arab Muslims who were there, they strongly encouraged to stay. Said, we'll make you full citizens. Something that no Islamic country has ever done. They said, stay. And the land that that Israel owns, they bought.
You know, interestingly enough, I read Samuel Clemens, Mark Twain's account of when he went to Israel. He said he would travel days and days without seeing a human being.
Oh, of course.
Prior to the return.
It was very sparsely populated, but there still were people there. And the Muslims that were there, the returning Israelites said, stay. And those who left didn't leave because they were forced out of their home by Israel. They left because they were ordered out of their home by the Arab League, because the Arab League wanted to annihilate the Jews. Why don't we tell the truth? There is no part of this headline that is accurate. And people yet would rather believe the lie than the truth.
Hi, this is Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. I want to personally invite you to a wonderful 2-hour free seminar on health.